This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. Notre Dame Hall, the iconic building on the Mount Mary University campus, was built nearly 90 years ago. But the work that goes on in one particular room is anything but historic. It's cutting-edge work being done in a space that serves the university and the community at large.
A million-dollar renovation over the summer upgraded the school's food lab, the centerpiece for the only four-year food science degree offered in the Milwaukee area. The lab also serves the dietetics program at the school as well. I had a chance to stop by the renovated space recently and met with Ann Vravik, who teaches in the food science department. Thanks for having us out here.
You bet. It's great to have you.
Well, and so let's start with where we are. There's lots of clinking going on around us. Tell me about the room we're sitting in.
We are sitting in the new food lab here at Mount Mary University, and this is the space where we do the dietetics teaching as well as the food science teaching.
Well, give us a thumbnail sketch. I mean, I think people have a sense for what food science is and what dietetics are, but can you kind of give us a compare and contrast? What are those two disciplines as they're taught at Mount Mary?
Yeah, well, dietetics has a focus on patient health. And so they're looking at giving the best recipes, or I shouldn't say recipes, the best food and nutrition to someone who is in a state of poor health or in health that needs some improvement or some attention. Food science, on the other hand, we're studying the whys and hows. Where does food not only come from, but why does it do the things that it does when you cook it or store it or change its texture, flavor, all of that sort of thing.
And presumably these two disciplines actually relate to each other as well. There are needs for a food scientist to understand dietetics and a dietitian to understand food science.
Yes, quite a bit. In fact, dietetics relies on food science in order to improve the health of patients. Whereas in food science, we're interested in what it is that keeps the food healthy and nutritious.
Well, so, and you teach food science here. Mm-hmm. The students that come through your program, what do they go on to do?
Well, food science is really diverse. So you could be in an area of research and development, which in and of itself is quite diverse. So you could be interested in just studying the flavors of foods and getting them correctly balanced for the best flavor possible. You could be interested in the color. You could be interested in the preservation of food. You could be interested in the health area of food. And all of those in R&D are used in order to make the best particular food product that a company would be developing. So there's R&D. There's also areas like marketing. You could be in the area of just understanding food to the point where you're developing and marketing the product for sale. You could be in even the area of writing and promotion that way. So you could be doing food blogs or writing for magazines or newspapers, that sort of a thing. And then there's the quality area, food safety. There's a lot of people that go into determining whether or not food products are safe, how they come off the line at a food processing plant if they contain microorganisms or mycotoxins or things that would alter someone's, you know, health or response to the food. So there's all different kinds of places you can go with food science.
Well, give us a before and after kind of snapshot of what the food lab was like until just a few months ago and what you're able to do here today because of what's around us.
Well, previously we had a food lab that had a lot of feeling like it was grandma's 1950s kitchen. And it was lovely. It was perfectly stocked. It did its job. However, things were getting a little bit outdated in terms of technology. And we realized very quickly that we needed to keep up with the changing times. And if our students were going to be able to present themselves well enough in industry, sure, they had to have better technology. So we gutted this entire kitchen or this entire laboratory space. It's quite huge, as you can see.
Yeah.
And added additional lab spaces. So the cooking equipment is all up to date, and all of our lab technology is up to date as well.
So these are, I mean, brand new ovens, brand new stoves, brand new everything.
Right, exactly. Plus we added induction ovens, which is a whole new technology in cooking, which we felt that our students needed to understand. And induction cooking is an incredible new technology.
So explain induction cooking for
us. Well, induction cooking doesn't actually use the same sort of gas heating that we're used to, or even electrical heating. It does use electricity, but it creates a magnetic field. And the magnetic field then causes the pan to heat up. So it's not the stove itself that's cooking, it's the magnetism in the pan that's doing the cooking.
And so there's not an application of heat from one spot, the food is all heating up at the same rate?
It is, heating up at the same rate and then within the pan itself. So you can actually touch the cooktop and it's not hot, but the pan is hot. So that's how it works.
There is also, just on the other side of the wall to my left, something called a sensory evaluation lab, which at first blush looks like a big empty room. Talk about the significance of that and how it relates to the lab we're in right now.
Yeah, the sensory lab is actually intended to be a big empty room. We want people that come in to taste different food products to not have any interference with smells or visual cues or things that might bias your opinion about a taste. So what people are doing is coming in to taste things that the food scientists have developed. So for example, a couple of weeks ago, we were looking at different mozzarella cheeses in terms of their fat content and how the fat then plays a role in what we perceive as saltiness. So they were studying whether or not high fat makes something taste less salty or more salty. So we had students and staff on campus come into that big empty room, sit down at their little desk spaces where there's no, no extra lighting, no smells, no anything. And we would pass food in then to them from this lab space into that big empty room.
Pass-through windows in this
right.
room, yes.
Those pass-through windows. And they couldn't then smell what was going on here in our lab. That was a very clean environment from which then to really concentrate on what they were tasting and whether or not they could sense the difference in the saltiness.
And I gather even the lighting in there is set up so that that takes one more stimulus away.
Exactly. So we have either natural lighting, so there are some cases where you want people to see differences in colors. There are other times where you don't want them to see differences in colors. So we have a whole different rainbow of colors of which we can add then to their tasting experience. So for example, this cheese that they were looking at, one of the recipes turned out to be a little bit more yellow than the other, and it was a difference in just a vitamin content of the two, and we didn't want that to bias their opinion on the taste. So if you look at a yellow cheese, that doesn't always necessarily look as appetizing as a pure white cheese when you're thinking of mozzarella. So the lighting we had on a red hue, and the red color then cancels the yellow color, and you can really focus on just the flavor and not the difference in the visual aspect of it.
How many food science students do you have at Mount Mary?
Right now we have that are actually declared as food science majors. We have 6, and there are another 4 that are coming in the fall. We probably will have a much bigger enrollment as the summer goes on. So we're expecting we can handle up to 18 students per class. So we can handle quite a bit, and we're expecting this program to grow.
Well, and I was wondering whether the revamped food lab is part of the goal of it is to be able to expand the program.
Definitely. So we definitely now have the teaching space available to accommodate a lot more students. We also have this teaching space available to accommodate even ADA students. So one of the kitchen areas or the lab areas has lower countertops and spaces for wheelchairs to roll up to the counter and actually do the same work that someone on feet would be doing. And that is an advantage also to our occupational therapy group, because those students come in wheelchairs so that they can experience what it's like for someone who is using a wheelchair, how to manipulate themselves throughout the kitchen and to get the same things done.
Talk about the demonstration kitchen that is right here, because I gather this is something else that is greatly improved since the previous food lab.
Yeah, our demonstration station is fabulous because it gives me an opportunity to demonstrate to the students exactly what I want the skills for them to learn. It also has a television screen rather than a chalkboard or a whiteboard. So I am actually not even using a chalkboard anymore in my teaching. I guess people haven't used chalkboard for forever, but you know, with a whiteboard, I'm not drawing on anything anymore, except that I have an iPad now that I carry around, and I can actually draw on the iPad with my PowerPoints. So students are getting a much more interactive understanding of the teachings that I'm offering. So they see not only what I'm demonstrating on the station, but then I can also demonstrate it if I'm looking at a chemical equation, for example. I can write out that chemical equation on that TV screen there.
And so this large TV screen is split into multiple views, and they can see the equation. They can also
see the
three cameras showing what you're doing.
Exactly. So if I'm trying to show them something like, you know, what a smoking oil looks like, I can actually zoom in on it and show them what they are supposed to be looking for.
Talk about the development process for this lab. How much of it was shaped by what you already knew you wanted, and how much was shaped by, you know, reaching out to industry around Milwaukee to find out what kinds of skills they're looking for in graduates?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually have an advisory committee that we refer to for a lot of information on what industry is interested in. So our advisory committee consists of about, right now we're at about 8 different food companies in the Milwaukee area, and they are experts in the food science world, and they join us by teleconference about once a month, once every 6 weeks, and we have offered up a number of questions to them about what they expect from a food scientist, and they continually give us feedback about things like whether or not certain regulations should be taught to the students, what sort of skills they should know, even details on the classes themselves. I had quite a few questions on what I should teach in food engineering, which is a very difficult course not only for the students to take, but also in order to just focus on the important areas in food engineering. I mean, you could go on and do an entire degree in that. So what were the important points about engineering that they needed to know in order to be effective food scientists in the real world?
Well, I wondered whether having a lab like this pushes the envelope for you even.
Oh, for sure. So I have already had multiple opportunities to expand my teaching in terms of what I'm showing the students. So for example, in our engineering class, for example, we were talking about induction cooking. They had to learn the equations, the electrical currents. They had to know all the details about what really goes into induction cooking from an engineering standpoint. So we came here into the lab and we actually did a few experiments right there on the stove so they could see what we were talking about, you know, and what is that magnetism, what pans work, what don't, and why do they work, why do they not work, that sort of thing.
There are currently 6 food science students mm-hmm. with a possibility of 4 more coming in.
Yeah.
That's still not a huge number for such a big space like this. What opportunities are there for the greater community beyond the boundaries of Mount Mary University itself to take advantage of this space?
Oh, a lot of opportunities. In fact, we've had a number of discussions with industries in the area who are interested in using our sensory space for their own tasting. So whether or not they involve the students in that or whether they use it as an industry themselves, this sensory lab is actually something that's pretty unique to many companies in the area. Some are trying to now add these laboratories to their own spaces, but a lot of them don't have it.
And so places that are making food, they at the moment don't necessarily have the ability to do taste testings in a controlled environment the way that you do here.
Correct. So let's say a company that makes chocolate, for example, has a request from a client or from a customer that they want a certain particular flavor to show up or to be a high note in that particular chocolate. When you're tasting it within just a pure laboratory environment or even within a conference room, there are so many factors then that play a role in your psychology when it comes to tasting. Whereas here you can eliminate all of that and really just focus on what is the actual flavor without all the distractions that you would get.
What are the psychological factors that play into how you're tasting chocolate, say?
Oh, it's crazy. So it's amazing how much your brain plays a role in taste. So for example, if you're on a diet, and you are cutting out sugar, from your diet. You're going to have a much different taste to sweetness than someone who is not on a diet. Let's say you're a smoker. That too will change your flavor. So those aren't necessarily psychological, except that they are physiological changes. But then there are psychological things like the memories that play a role when you taste something. There is a very big connection between memory and flavor. And all of us know, like, you know, particularly at Thanksgiving, that just that all the memories that come around with, you know, eating turkey and how grandma would make it versus how mom makes it versus all the different people in your family, all the things that happen throughout your life. So the memories play a role in that. And then there's other psychology, like whether or not you are just feeling okay that day. If you're just having a bad day, you may not enjoy a flavor as much as if you're just having a gosh darn good day and things are just happy.
Of course, if you're having a bad day, maybe tasting chocolate would give you, would
true,
help you have a better day.
right? It should for all of us. If it doesn't, there's something wrong.
Well, along those lines, when this lab was coming together for you, having done what you've done for as long as you've done it, it must have been a little bit like the proverbial kid in the candy store.
Oh, for sure. I couldn't stop. I had to be reined in. I have such appliance envy in here. It's so much fun to be working with this high-end equipment. But yet we also chose equipment that was also what people would be actually using in a kitchen. Because in dietetics, they're trying to develop recipes for people that they will use in their own kitchens. So you don't want to have to tell them to use some sort of texture analyzer to end up with, you know, the correct texture for a particular product. They need to be able to use what we have here. So yeah, there was a good balance between buying too much and too high technology versus being practical.
Anne Vrevic, congratulations on the new space, and thank you so much for showing us around.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for coming.
Anne Vrevic is an adjunct professor in the food science program at Mount Mary University in Milwaukee. You can see pictures of the school's new food lab at wuwm.com.